Everybody, my name is Scott and I am an alcoholic. Can you guys hear me okay? Okay. You would be able to hear me without the microphone too, probably. All right. I would like to thank whoever wanted me to speak here tonight. I don't know who that was. Probably had something to do with my mom. My mom is here, so I'll be limiting my story to things that actually happened. I guess I'll just get right into it. I went to my first meeting about Alcoholics Anonymous on August 29th, 2007, and I claimed to have one day of sobriety. I don't really know if I have that day or not. You know, they say in Alcoholics Anonymous, if you don't remember your last drunk, you're doomed to repeat it, but I don't necessarily think that's true because I have no idea what I was doing my last day drinking. I have no idea what I was doing my first day sober. Neither of those days could have been very good because I ended up in AA the next day, right? So, and I think that's what alcoholism is, right? It's like this inability to drink, and it's this inability not to drink, inability to live life drunk, and inability to live life sober. And so, so I found myself walking into my first meeting, like I said, August 29th, 2007. So my sobriety day, so the 28th, the day prior to that. And I had been in a like a 30-day rehab program prior to that, May of that same year. And we went through the, you know, the 30-day program or whatever. And I get out, and I didn't really have anywhere to go. And so I call my buddy up who's living in Pittsburgh, California, where I still live, not with him, but in that city. And you know, it's like he's like, hey, how you doing? And he's like, oh, I'm doing pretty good. You know, just got married, just had a kid, just bought a house, you know. How you doing? Oh, I just got out of rehab. Can I live with you? He's like, sure. So I lived with him for a while after that. But, you know, in that program, they gave me a big book about Alcoholics Anonymous, and they told me to go to meetings. And, you know, and they really wanted me to stay there. They're like, oh, you should, like, stay here and, like, live in an SLE or do outpatient or whatever. But, you know, I was in a rush to get back home and start pissing people off, and that's what I did. And so I stayed sober for, like, I don't know, maybe a month. And you know, I'm living in this guy's garage, sleeping on a mattress on the floor, and I'm drinking again, and everyone's like, what do we do with this guy, right? Like, at first everyone's like, oh, he drinks again like us, and it's like, oh no, he doesn't at all. And so so my mom's like thinking about selling her truck and like sending me back to this rehab place. And the only way that I know how to stay sober is to pay someone $15,000 to babysit me for 30 days. And we didn't quite have, you know, it didn't matter if it was $15 billion, you know, that wouldn't have happened. And so I go, why don't I just try this AA thing? You know, I already got the book. It only costs $1. And I can handle that, right? You know, and so first meeting, you know, and I got to my first meeting about Alcoholics Anonymous, like a lot of young people get to their first meeting about Alcoholics Anonymous. My mom drops me off in the parking lot, and I walk up. It's the Wednesday night traditional group is still a meeting. It's not in the same place. It used to be on East Dragalus at a church, one of the seven churches they have on that street. Antioch has like the most churches I've ever seen in my life. It's unreal. So I walk in. I walk up to my first meeting about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I look in the door, and it's like dark and it's scary. And I decide I'm gonna leave, right? Like I'm just gonna like go tell my mom that there's no meeting or, you know, whatever, right? And so I'm like walking out, right? Walking back to the parking lot, and all I'm thinking about is just like half a bottle of Jim Beam I got stashed behind a television set where I'm sleeping on a mattress on the floor of a garage. I told my story in El Sobrani once, and this guy comes up to me after the meeting. He's like, "What happened to the half a bottle of Jim Beam?" It's like, I don't know, but you're in the right place. I never thought about it. I don't know what happened to that. I know it was there, you know. And so I'm walking out of the meeting and just gonna go, like, try to talk my mom out of, you know, this meeting, you know, making me go to this meeting or whatever. And, you know, my story in Alcoholics Anonymous has been like taking like 20 pennies and throwing them up in the air and having them all come down heads, right? Like, it's just like, and each one of those pennies represents like a person, a place, a smile, a hug, you know. And it's like I'm not really sure, like, what's more important than others, right? Like, and I can even criticize, like, this rehab that I spent 15 grand or my parents spent 15 grand and sending me, you know, it's like the same amount of money that I spent getting a master's degree. I spent 30 days at this program, and it's like each one of these things are pennies, right? And they're all like these random events that happen in my sobriety that I get to talk about. And so I'm walking out to the parking lot, and these two women are walking in, and I do something very like rare for myself, as I ask them for help, and I'm like, hey, is there a AA meeting here? Just in case, like, you know, just in case they're regular Christian folk. I don't want to, you know, scare them. And they're like, yeah, there's a meeting in here. And I walk with these two women into this room, and all of a sudden it's like not so dark and it's not so scary anymore, and there's people in there, and they're like laughing and having a good time. And there's this empty chair there, and one of the women, she points to the chair and she goes, sit there. And that was the best suggestion I ever took in Alcoholics Anonymous. And there was this guy who was sitting there and he was playing with his phone, and she like smacks him and she goes, talk to him. And that was the worst suggestion he ever took in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I knew some. This wasn't exactly my first meeting of AA. You know, I like the first thing I knew of AA. You know, I went through this 30-day spin dry, and I grew up in a household with alcoholic stepfathers, three consecutive alcoholic stepfathers after my mom and my dad split up. So I knew something of AA, right? And I knew something of sponsorship. And, you know, it was funny, like, growing up, like, I always thought the sponsor was just, like, the guy that my mom called when my dad was drunk again, you know, like the AA police. But so I'm sitting next to this guy, and he's talking to me, and I just know that if I don't get a sponsor at this meeting, that I was going to, like, go home, and I was going to drink that bottle of Jim Beam that was touched on the television set. And, you know, I hear a lot of like good advice, well-intentioned advice for getting sponsorship. Right. And I picked my sponsor just simply because he was the guy sitting next to me. Right. Like, there was no other thought process that went into that. It was just like, here's a guy who's talking to me, and I'm going to ask him to be my sponsor. And I didn't want to like overcommit, you know? So I was like, hey, will you be my temporary sponsor? You know, like, he's like, yeah, sure. And so I sat through that meeting. You know, I'm not one of those people who don't remember their first meeting. I remember it very well. I remember all the people that were in that meeting, and a lot of those people are still in those meetings or died in those meetings. And I'm grateful for that. Anyway, after the meeting, my newfound sponsor, he like takes a piece of paper out and he starts to highlight all the meetings, you know, that him and his little clique went to. And you know, it was funny, like when I was doing Alcoholics Anonymous, people told me to keep coming back, and I thought that was funny that they thought I had somewhere else to go, right? Like like this was it, right? And you know, it was like at that time I was going to like this outpatient program at a well-known hospital that would have like, I don't know, 2 days a week, 3 days a week outpatient or whatever. And they had this rule that you couldn't like drink or use within 24 hours of their meetings or whatever. And, you know, so an alcoholic of my type, I've lost the ability to choose whether I drink or use. And so I would wake up in the morning and I'd drink. And then I wouldn't go to the group, right? You know? And so here I am at this first meeting about Alcoholics Anonymous, where my new sponsor, he's like, listen, he goes, you go home tonight, and if you stay sober, you're to call me in the morning and we go to a meeting about Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, but if you drink tonight, you're to call me in the morning and we will go to a meeting about Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Because we all know in Alcoholics Anonymous that the greatest punishment for drinking is getting drunk. And you know, it's like this whole time people were like, you need to stop drinking, right? You can't drink. And here's this guy. He's like, hey, like, you're an alcoholic. Like, that's what we do. We drink, right? But we also go to meetings. And I'm like, this guy's telling me I can drink. And I haven't drank since. So I don't know what that is. But he goes, hey, you know, on Sunday mornings, we meet over at this guy Paul's house. And we work the steps, you know, whatever that is. And he goes, meet me at the Alano Club the next day. And then I'll give you the address to Paul's house. And so my second meeting about Alcoholics Anonymous was at the Antioch Alano Club on First Street, right by the train tracks. I've been to a lot of Alano clubs like around this country, and they all always seem to be like on railroad tracks. I'm not really sure what the deal is with that. The Antioch one's great because the train rolls by like like that close to it, and it like rumbles, right? And everyone's like, it's a higher power. It's like we keep on telling the same jokes over and over in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're funny every time. I don't really know what the deal is. But anyway, I remember walking into that meeting, and it was like, it's 2007, like long past like the time where people smoke inside, but they smoked in the Antioch Alano Club until 2009. And I was a heavy smoker back then, and I walk in there, I'm like, oh my God, I found the last place in California where you can smoke indoors. Like, this is an amazing place. And then I went to that meeting, and so that was my second meeting. Third meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was at the Alano Club, 12:35 meeting. Next meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was Saturday, 12:35 meeting of Alcoholics at the Alano Club. And then Sunday morning, I'm to go show up at Paul's house to work the steps or whatever that means, right? And so I got this thing about being early and being late. Like, I don't like to be either. So I just like circle Paul's house for like 30 minutes, right? And I pull up to Paul's house right at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I'm sitting there, or maybe like I pull up 5 minutes early and I sit there for 5 minutes. And as I'm sitting there, my sponsor, Mike, he pulls up behind me, and I get out of the car like I just got there, and he's carrying a box of donuts, and Mike bought donuts for these guys every Sunday morning, but he would never have to do that again because that became my job. But so I walk with Mike into Paulie's house, and I remember being a little tripped out that like Mike just opened Paul's house, right? Like, he didn't knock, he didn't like stomp really loud, he wasn't like, we're coming, you know. He just walked into Paul's house, and as he's pushing the door open, he looks at me and he says that this is a safe place. And I didn't really know what a safe place was, like particularly like at 8 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, right? Some of you know what that's like. And so I walk into Paulie's house, and there's like this little kid like chasing a dog around, and like there's a woman cooking breakfast, and there's like a group of guys sitting around a table just talking, drinking coffee, right? And I look at these guys, and these guys are like tough looking guys, right? Like, I know right off the bat they're not gonna like me. These are guys who like ride Harleys and drive tow trucks and have been in I've been in fights before, like maybe even that morning. I don't know, like. And so so I'm 5 days sober. I'm like, you know, I'm not really sure what's going on. So we go out in the back, and the head tough guy, you know, Paulie, he sits us all down and he goes, so who's got an issue they want to talk about? And I'm like, really, is this what you guys do? You pull up on your Harleys and tow trucks every Sunday and talk about your issues, right? Like, this is different. And this guy, Ron, sitting to my right, he starts talking about how his sister's coming to town, and he like gets choked up about that, and he kind of cries about it. And so that began my journey about Alcoholics Anonymous and how I relate to people, is that, you know, these guys weren't necessarily tough guys. They were just guys, right? They were tough if they wanted to be tough, and they cried if they felt like crying, and that was something that I never knew anything about. And so I sat there on Sunday morning with these guys, and they all went off to their, you know, wives or partners or jobs or whatever, you know, normal people do. It's funny, you know, like my sponsor, when I first came in, he's like, so you got a job? No. You got a family? No. You got a girlfriend? No. He's like, good. I'm like, what? Like, these are all things I'm thinking about killing myself over yesterday. You tell me this is good, right? And now I know what that means, because I truly had like absolutely nothing better to do except for sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, all these guys like wandered off to life, right? And I sat there with Paulie. It was just me and him, and we were talking about Alcoholics Anonymous and alcoholism. And, you know, Paul told me the most profound thing that I had ever heard in my life, right? Like, up until this time, like, everyone's telling me what my problem is, which is alcohol, right? Like, you drink too much, you drink too often, you drink too fast. That's my favorite one. Like, oh, if I just slow it down a little bit, I'll be okay, right? Like, but Paul says the most profound thing I've ever heard in my life, and probably ever since then. You know, it's weird, like in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, like people try to be profound, right? Like, I try to be profound, and like, it doesn't mean nothing to anybody, right? And then like some guy just like wings some comment off the cuff and it saves someone's life. And so what Paul tells me is, he says that alcohol is not your problem, that alcohol is your solution. And that made more sense to me than anything that ever made sense to me in my whole entire life. And because I woke up every day wanting to die, and I took a drink of alcohol, and I didn't want to die anymore. Right? That's what alcohol did for me. And it kept me alive just long enough to come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and find a solution, right? And since then, you know, this didn't happen like sitting there at Paul's house, but I've come to realize my definition of alcoholism, and that's that it's the unmanageability. That explains why we're here, right? Like a lot of people drink alcoholically, right? A lot of people are powerless over alcohol, but unless your life is unmanageable, there's really no reason to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. If my life wasn't unmanageable, if I still thought I could manage my own life without Alcoholics Anonymous, I would be, right? I'd be at home right now. Like, I'm sure there's some sports event going on or something, right? Like normal people do. You know, I've broken my life down into like two parts, right? My outside life and my inside life. And when I'm sober, right, like I can manage my outside life. When I'm sober, I can manage my outside life. I can do family. I can do work. I can do relationships. I can do friends. I can do all that stuff. But my insides are coming unglued, right? Like I'm waking up every day thinking about killing myself. I'm waking up every day not wanting to get out of bed. I'm waking up every day thinking about a nap, right? And the only thing, and the big book describes that as a spiritual malady. And so I go through life like sober long enough to like put things together, right? To manage my outside life, but the inside life is not doing well. And I end up drinking again, right? And I take a drink and all of a sudden my inside life is managed, right? I can sit still with myself. I don't feel like killing myself. I can wake up and deal with the day, right? But my outside life totally falls apart, right? I can't do family. I can't do work. I can't do relationships. I can't do friendships, right? So I'm like caught in between these two ways of living. That the only thing that makes me not want to die turns me into someone that I can't live with anymore. And so that's what alcoholism is to me. And that's what Paul explained to me with this simple, alcohol is not your problem, alcohol is your solution, right? Because alcohol is my solution. It's a solution that makes my life horribly unmanageable, right? And so what Paul told me is he told me if I stuck around here long enough that I would learn about this thing called God, whatever that means. And that thing called God would be my solution to be able to manage my inside life and my outside life at the same time, right? And it's not like I had anything better to do, right? It's like, okay, like, I've been talking about the gift of desperation a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was just in a, and I've also been talking a lot about, like, G-O-D, right? Like, group of drunks. And, I mean, these are things that are said in every AA meeting. And I was just in San Diego at a roundup, and someone said that their acronym for God, G-O-D, was Gift of Desperation. I was like, I've never heard that before. I'm going to use that. So my sponsor says in Alcoholics Anonymous, it used to be you had to cite your source three times before you can just like use it as your own thinking. But these days you can just go ahead and use it as your own thinking. You don't have to cite people anymore. So anyway, I left that first meeting of Alcoholics, and I left that first meeting at Paul's house with a little bit of hope, right? Like maybe this thing could work for a guy like me, right? And so I went home, and I remember going with my friend and his kid and his wife, and like they were like, Uncle Scott's happy today, right? And I think I was, right? Like I think I was happy for the first time in a long time. Not gonna touch that again. Okay. So I sat there with Paul like every Sunday morning for a long time, right? For 9 months. And we worked the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we worked the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous right out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, as I believe they should be worked. We worked them rapidly at a fast clip, as I believe they're written in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, in AA, we raise our hand as newcomers, like, for the first 30 days, right? And I remember asking my sponsor at 5 days sober, like, how long do I have to do this for, right? And he's like, 30 days. I'm like, that seems pretty excessive. At 30 days sober, me, Paul, Ron, some other guys, a man by the name of Daryl, and a woman by the name of Helen, who is a member of Al-Anon, we drove up to hear this man named JD speak and Jackson. And I was 30 days sober, and my mom just bought me like a brand new car. Like we had some money left over and from, you know, like taking money, borrowing money for rehab, you know, it's like, oh, you didn't go to rehab. Like, here's a car. Like, that's how expensive it is. So 30 days sober, I got this brand new car. It was like that day. Right. And me and Ron, and we're driving up to Jackson, and like Ron pulls out a cigarette, you know, to smoke it. I'm like, hey Ron, like I just bought this car like today. Right. Like, I don't want to smoke in it. And he goes, are you going to keep this car till it's an antique? And I'm like, no. He's like, well, smoke or smoke. We should smoke. I was like, okay, that sounds good to me. And we smoked in the car. Little did he know, I actually am keeping that car till it's an antique. I'm working on it. But anyway, I remember, like, I'm not sure why I'm telling this story, to be honest. I get in the car with Ron and I remember like trying to find a radio station. Like, I don't even listen to music. Like, I haven't bought a tape or an album since like 1989, like MC Hammer's Can't Touch This. I'm just one of those weird people who doesn't listen to music. But anyway, I'm like trying to find music so I don't have to talk to Ron, right? And I tell Ron, I go, hey, like what kind of music do you like to listen to? And he says, I really just want to talk. And I was like, okay, this is different, right? Like, I don't know. And, you know, like, I only knew this guy for 30 days. Like, but at that time in my life, it was like one of the longest relationships I'd had with anybody. And we're driving up there. And then one, Ron tells me that he watches so much CSI that he's fairly sure he can kill somebody and get away with it. Thirty days didn't seem like that long of a relationship when he said that, but and then also on the way back, he asked me what step I was on, and that was a question that I, you know, a reoccurring question that I've received in Alcoholics Anonymous even to this day. What step are you on? And I said, well, I'm on step four, but I want to do it right. Like, I'm just waiting, you know. I don't want to do it wrong, right? And Ron tells me, he says that the only wrong way to do step four is not to do it at all. And so that night I stayed up maybe an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. And I did my fourth step. The next day I called my sponsor, Mike, to schedule an appointment to do a fifth step or whatever. I thought I had like maybe a couple of weeks or whatever. And I call him, I go, Hey Mike, I finished my fourth step. And he goes, okay. He goes, I get off at 5:00. I'll be there at 5:30. I'm like, oh, okay. You know? And so I did my fifth step that night with him outside, chain smoking, you know, working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I guess my point is that, you know, at 30 days sober, I was doing a fifth. At 30 days sober, I was doing a fourth step, and at 31 days sober, I was doing a fifth step. And that thing about raising your hand every day for 30 days, I remember being in that meeting the 31st day, and they asked for people who were in their first 30 days of sobriety, and I just remember sitting there quietly, right? And then I remember this old timer Denny, he goes, and that's Scott, and he doesn't have to raise his hand no more. And then I heard Polly behind me laugh, and you know, that story doesn't mean anything to anybody except for me, which means the world. But anyway, I think I got about 5 more minutes or so. So I sat there Sunday morning, every morning with Paul, and every week he'd be like, what step are you on? And be like, one, what step are you on? Two, you know, what step are you on? Three, you know, and I was working the steps at a rapid pace, and, you know, what step are you on? Seven, what step are you on? Eight, what step are you on? Nine, what step are you on? Nine, what step are you on? Nine, nine, nine. And so I got to the point where I just didn't want to do step nine, and so I'm not sure what it was. It was, you know, when I was drinking, I got pancreatitis from drinking alcoholically, and I worked at this bar, and they didn't want me to drink while I was working anymore because they honestly cared about me. And so what I did is I'll go up to the storage room and I'll drink the alcohol out of the storage room, right? And I got caught. And, you know, relatively speaking, those people at that bar meant as much to me as the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, like, I really betrayed these people. And so whenever I looked at step nine, I always thought about that, right? Like, I always thought I would have to go and I would have to do this. And so sitting at Polly's house on Sunday morning, being on step nine forever, you know, that spiritual malady started to come back, right? Like that feeling of waking up in the morning and not wanting to live started to come back. And so I went over to Paul and I told him that, right? And I go, hey, Paul, like, I got this idea, you know, I'm just going to take like a box of money or like, or whatever, an envelope full of money, like figure out like how much a case of Jägermeister costs. And I'm going to put that money in the envelope and I'm going to slip it under the door and say sorry or whatever. And what Paul told me is that in Alcoholics Anonymous, we make direct amends wherever possible. And it sounded to him like I could make direct amends and that he didn't want me coming back to his house the following Sunday morning, telling him that I made the amends that way. And what I heard him say is I wouldn't be allowed back at his house on Sunday morning if I made the amends that way. And it's certainly possible that he meant that. And so this whole thing of like this fear of making that amends, or like that fear of drinking, or that fear of like getting to the point where like I want to kill myself again. You know, only an alcoholic is like, do I kill myself or say I'm sorry? Like, I don't know, right? Like, but the fear of death, the fear of drinking, the fear of making that amends was nowhere near the fear I had of losing Sunday mornings at 8 a.m., right? And, you know, I was like a quitter and a runner my whole life. And the greatest thing you can teach a quitter and a runner is consistency, and that's what 8 a.m. on Sundays gave me. And so I went and I made my amends, and I truly had a spiritual experience from that, right? And I've been writing that ever since, right? And you know, I've had varying degrees of participation in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I've always like kept my finger in the door just long enough to like get my senses back to come back here, right? And I went to the International Convention in San Antonio, Texas, and I met a man named Danny S. And it was just a quick hi, how you doing, maybe a meal together or whatever. And then later that year, like, I decided that I didn't want to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous anymore, right? Like, I went through, like, this I dated someone for 3 weeks, and she broke up with me, and I was like, the world's over. And so I'm, like, going to give up on Alcoholics Anonymous, and then all of a sudden, I still got this GSR commitment I got to finish up before I give up on you people. And so at the end of the meeting, my last meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not sure if I was planning on drinking again or not, but certainly a possibility. We get in a circle and you got to say if you're available or not, right? It's not just like, are you available? Like, they put you on the spot. And so we go around the circle and we elect people, 2-year commitments, and it's coffee commitment, and it's going around the circle, you know, available, not available, available, not available. And in my mind the whole time, I'm like planning what I'm going to do with all this extra time I have not going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And as it's coming around, this guy, Danny S., who I met one time and hadn't seen since, he whispers in my ear, he goes, you need to make yourself available. And as it comes around to me, I'm like, I'm available. And I got voted into a 2-year coffee commitment at General Service. And and that's been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's just been like not knowing what to do, not knowing where to go. That I come and I seek members of Alcoholics Anonymous out, right? Like, I've done things. I remember 5 days sober, someone telling me, you need to go meet as many alcoholics as you can, because you never know what alcoholic is going to end up saving your life. And I'm constantly in that position where I'm sitting with somebody in a rough spot, talking to somebody who's saving my life. And then I like remember 5 days sober, like hanging out in some parking lot at some restaurant, the matchmaker in Antioch, where some guy tells me I need to meet alcoholics so that they can save my life. And I realized that I've taken that advice, right? So, you know, I was 24 years old when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was drinking for 8 years, I guess. And so that was a third of my life, which pales in comparison to other people, right? But, you know, today I'm 36 years old, and I'm almost 12 years sober, and that means I've been right here for one third of my life, I've been, you know, right here with you, an active and participating member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can honestly say that everything good in my life, everything attractive of me that shines through to other people is absolutely not my accomplishment. It's the accomplishment of Alcoholics Anonymous and the people that really raised me in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's all I have to say. Thank you. Aww.